You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and welcome to another edition of William Hill's Daily Racing Podcast. It is Friday the 28th of February. Ben Barrett in the presenter's chair once more. I'm absolutely delighted to say that I've been joined by ITV broadcaster, journalist and for the day William Hill Racing Radio pundit, Tanya Stevenson. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Really looking forward to our chat.
Well, it's been good. You've been in the racing radio studio today with Gordon Brown and Andy Holding. That's a heck of a trio, I have to be honest.
I don't know, I think I'm a bit overwhelmed.
I think I'm out of the handicap. I think I've run well considering I'm out.
I wouldn't say that in the slightest. I think it's good to have a good quality trio in there. Gordon will see anybody through the day's racing. We're recording this at around about 4 o'clock. Yes. So the big question is, have you been in form? Have you found our listeners some winners?
Yeah, we've found some winners. Also, I'd like to point out a winner called Brinkley that's just won for David Pipe. It's come into this country having some really strong Irish form.
Okay.
And it's just won at Newbury. I want to flag up the fact that if you look out for horses like Front View, trained by Joseph O'Brien, Jungle Junction, trained by Jessica Harrington, they've all got interwoven form with Brinkley. Those going forward, maybe into the Cheltenham Festival or indeed Aintree and Punchestown, that is a strong line of form. Even if those three don't run, if they've got interwoven form with those three names,
if you were to put in the notebook as definitely much as the betting slip then for going forward. We like that.
We like Brinkley. Big grey horse. Bit like, who else did he have that was grey? But David Pipe trains it. It was a Grand Cru. Bit like Grand Cru. And Dynast. It looks like Dynast.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a couple to look for going forward. Now, we've been talking Cheltenham Festival on this podcast with pretty much anyone and everyone since Boxing Day, it seems.
I can imagine that, yeah.
And it is very cyclical in how it goes. We always keep coming around to it. I'm really delighted that you're on the podcast today, because I was going to ask you a little bit about going to Cheltenham Festival with a professional head on. We have so many pundits who are going to be going or are going to be enjoying it at home on the sofa or with their pundit head on or with their supporters head on and just trying to enjoy the festival. You're going to be there as part of the ITV team going forward. Do you think that the fact that you go there with a professional head on affects in any way, shape or form, positively or negatively, your enjoyment of something so grand as the Cheltenham Festival?
Certainly does, because I've never actually haven't seen a race live at the Cheltenham Festival, however, being there for many, many years, for something like now 20 years, if not more. If you rewind before my broadcast days, my father and I held jointly a business, i.e. a pitch at Cheltenham itself for the festival. And even then, you didn't really see a race
live. You were facing the wrong way.
We were facing the wrong way. Either that, I was the clerk, so I'd been asked to get the figures out. In that day and age, you didn't have computers. So yes, it was a professional, so you're busy trying to work out the figures with pen and paper and to see what your liabilities were. You do get an appreciation of the enormity of the meeting from, say, the late 70s, early 80s. It's just grown and grown and grown.
Yeah.
We were not fortuitous enough to stand in the big stand. We stood, our pitch was what's now the best mate enclosure, which I think more so in our days, in the late 70s and 80s, was much more populated because it was more grassroots, more earthy. Okay, yeah. Now there's a kind of purpose-built stand. The one they had was just a set of wooden stairs. You wouldn't realise that now. You look in the old kind of faded black and white sepia photos. That's kind of what it was. Whereas as the technology's grown and I've come behind the scenes more of being in front of the scenes, yes, of course, I was with John McCurick in front of the scenes, but this year and previous 3 years I've been behind the scenes for ITV doing the stats. And yes, it does, because you have to go in there workmanlike and you can't be so giddy.
Yes.
There's no time for being giddy or passionate or enthusiastic because you have to be accurate. And that's really cold. I'm really sorry to say that.
No, that's a really valid point.
There has to be some accuracy and some calmness, and because you can't get anything back on live TV. And the expectancy is that you know, all those in front of camera, they know it all. But when everything's going on around them, the hubbub, the drama, the excitement, the adrenaline's going on around them, they need a couple of people that, oh, that one, that jockey's won that three times before, hasn't it? And they've already said the answer themselves, but they just want the confidence boosting yes. And that's what you are. And I appreciate myself as a sweeper. So not only doing the fun stuff, the jockey or the horse or the trainer winning it on previous times or not winning it as a first Cheltenham, it's also picking up the details that other people would presume that are boring. Can you make sure how many finishes there? Can you make sure the horse is all right? Can you see how many favourites have won? How many rides that jockey's had today? Going into tomorrow, how many bans there's been? Has there been bans? How many entries there are for races? So it's sweeping up all the information that then gets regurgitated and making sure that's correct. So, and there might be things going on outside of that. So you've got the Cheltenham Festival, of course, and there might be other meetings and jockeys and trainers having winners. There might not, there'll be at Cheltenham one day, for example, Brian Hughes might have a winner at Cheltenham one day, might be off to Doncaster the next day.
Yeah.
So it's trying to pick up on the stories, get some continuity to those stories. So yes, your sort of, my role is to be accurate and stable and
So does that involve, does that mean you're likely to do maybe a little bit more prep than some of the others, or certainly some of the other pundits that we have in here? Are you kind of thinking already, I know where I'm going to need to be?
Yeah, I'm lucky because I've been doing it for quite a few years, and you said you've been speaking about it since Boxing Day. I've been thinking about Cheltenham and Aintree
as a whole,
because not all horses that you see win from Boxing Day are going to be at Cheltenham, and that's not a bad thing. It's because they are more suited to the configuration of the tightness and the quickness of Aintree. But then, of course, you've got to be across both meetings, because whatever comes out of Cheltenham running on an unlucky fifth, you know, or might be a very, very facile winner, they might be picking up the double. So you've got to think of the pair of them in one glut, because when Cheltenham finishes, Aintree is very quick behind it. But yes, you have a whole, you can't really, when people say, oh, what do you fancy for Cheltenham? And I say, well, I haven't really thought about it yet. Just think I'm mad and I come off planet Mars. But it's not because for the want of fancying anything. It's because I'm working behind the scenes to get everything spot on, organisation, get all the admin done. And then when the festival comes, because you don't want to be, when someone in front of cameras asking you politely for what's that jockey's number of winners at Cheltenham, you're like, get on my son, go on. You've got to be a little bit professional.
Yeah, you've got to remain a little bit more reserved.
Guarded.
Almost. Yes, that's a better word, guarded.
You've got to be guarded. But no, I find myself more looking back at Cheltenham retrospectively these days. But I have treated myself this year in that I'm working for the first 3 days at Cheltenham, and I have going to treat myself for the first year for about 20 years to actually see Cheltenham on Gold Cup Day.
Well, you know, I'm glad you said that, because one of my questions was going to be, without naming a selection as such, what does that allow you to enjoy? Can you enjoy a rivalry, a particular horse, win, lose or draw, or a storyline a little bit more in your role, i.e. Fourkeen coming back and the whole story? Does that mean that you can enjoy that a little bit more because you're within that bubble?
When you're doing all your graft and your homework, you are looking, as you say, for the stories. So you're looking for the strands. If that eventuality happens, what happens? And so there's part professional and part sentimentality. So you want your sentiment, you want a Fourkeen, and your sentiment, perhaps you might want Rachel Blackmore to be top jockey. That would be a proper story.
Yeah,
I'm not going to say lovely, because that's unfair to Rachel. She's a proper jockey.
Yeah.
But it's a proper story for racing, because going through the whole of racing this season, I don't think that enough recognition has been done to Rachel Blackmore's achievements, the amount of Grade 1 wins she's had. And going into the festival, it has now been, I know that Rupert sent out some press releases that, you know, how short she is now to be top jockey. So we've lost the fact that, say, we're not focusing so much on Willie Mullins. And without focusing on Willie or Gordon Elliott, perhaps we should be honing in on Henry de Bromhead. That's how I'm thinking.
Yeah,
there's more of an awareness of the stories and the sentiment. and there's so much going through your mind. I mean, I've got lever arch files, whereas normally people would be taking packs and packs of clothing, umbrellas and boots, and I'm taking that and some. I'm taking about three or four
taking
bags of lever arch files if this eventuality. Yeah. And Cheltenham, I don't know whether everyone's aware, Cheltenham are so proactive in the fact that they provide, through a company called Race News, so many media guides, which are helpful. And they're awesome. And there's so many media guides out there, and websites such as the William Hill website are so awesome with so much detail. So you're on things the whole time. And it's things like William Hill and competitors alike that offer up the stories.
Yes.
The eventualities that they price up offer up more stories. And there are potential fairy tales of a punter's picked at six winners through the festival.
Yes, of course.
And you like to hear, oh my goodness, where did he get or she get her crystal ball from?
Yeah. We also get stories recently about how bookies are fearing Wednesday, but they're looking forward to the other days and stuff like that. So you're kind of on top of all that, those before they've even happened almost.
Well, I get a lot of help from everyone in the industry. I get a lot of help from you guys.
It's journalistic, isn't it?
The rapport you build throughout the years. You just get a lot of help, and the need for information that then is going to be exposed in a great way in storytelling throughout the media and the press, and there's the appreciation of that, and then you just build up the story from there. That's you are behind the scenes, starting off with the Once Upon a Time and doing the Happily Ever After, and I love doing it, and it's a case of not getting any recognition for it. That's not what I want. It's just I want the meeting to get recognition for it.
Do you find that then you're part of one of the unsung, unrecognised teams then? Because it's not just a pundit may come in here and talk about their selection. That's one person, one bet, one selection.
Yeah.
You're going there and you're making a team sing. Do you feel that camaraderie in on the day? You're all there as a unit.
There's some real graft of the team. The real team people are those that hold the lenses, that hold the camera lens in any weathers. The real team people are those that get up really early in the morning, those that, for example, the graphics typers who touch type at the time of the result going across the line, or at the time of an interview. They haven't, their shift is from before the opening show to the end, but their shift has started in Boxing Day onwards because they've had many meetings. The team are the behind the scenes staff, like the producer, the director, the sound team are phenomenal. They get their little masks up and through all weathers get it to work. And the cable, people that lay the cables, they're the real team. I've just get the luxury to help tell the story.
Absolutely fascinating. Thank you. Thank you. Genuinely thank you. That's the most interesting general conversation I've had on this podcast in a little while. I really appreciate that. We talked about Rachel Blackmore. Just to throw up the top top jockey odds, Paul Townend, 15-8. Rachel Blackmore in at 4-1 alongside Davy Russell. Mm. Talk us about Rachel Blackmore and her chances in this market. There's
Honeysuckle, a Platard. I think there's a lot of people that haven't appreciated that she's going to be on Monoly, I presume, in the Gold Cup.
Okay.
And outside of Santini and Album Photo, my selection in the Gold Cup potentially would be Monoly, if you see its form. But not only that, recently she rode in a big handicap, and she rode a 25-1 winner just a couple of days ago in a big handicap. It's not only the ones that you see Rachel riding, and Henry de Bromhead had a phenomenal season this year. It's those handicaps that are key, and she will be on some key Giggenstown stud horses and some key horses for Henry de Bromhead as a whole. She's going to get a glut of rides. We know Paul Townend, he's going to be on some big Willie Mullins horses. He'll be on Album Photo. David Russell won't necessarily be on all the Giggenstown's horses. I mean, obviously he'll get rides for Giggenstown, but he won't be on the number one ones all the time. Barry Geraghty potentially always is reduced to the J.P. McManus things. No bad thing. Defi DeSoy included. That is no bad thing. Defi DeSoy and Champ. you tend to look at the markets, you tend to look at those towards the top of the betting in the key Grade 1 events, but please, if you are looking at this market, look at the handicaps as well. And for me, I would want to be siding with Rachel Blackmore, because it's not so much the favourites, which she has got. There's some outside 10, 12, even 25 to 1 shots that she's riding that brings her to the fore in this.
Fascinating. See, that's the type of market we don't often get to on the William Hill Daily Racing Podcast, but I'm glad we've highlighted that. 4-1 could be a nice little bit of value. Right, that's our Cheltenham Festival chat on with. Just to round up a bit of news, a little bit of sad news today, unfortunately, that Under So has been retired after a little bit of trouble in working on Thursday. A suspendary tendon injury means that that is that for Under So. Real shame, really, when 12 years old, an incredible career already behind, but that's just a shame that we're not going to see one more crack at a Queen Mother Champion chase.
Certainly is, because you'd want him to have garnered his fair adulation and recognition and a wonderful send-off wherever he may or may not have finished his finishing position at Cheltenham in that champion chase, or indeed if he had thought to go elsewhere, say the Ryanair chase. But Under So had won 10 Grade 1s. He's always a horse to be fearful of. Deputy de Soy certainly realised that. And maybe it was his most recent battle with Defe that in the end has been a hard fought battle, but we remember him for all his great wins. And
yes.
He was and not only that, he's banned of supporters.
Yes, there is.
Which lit up the sport. His band of supporters that would follow him, they were dedicated to him. They showed utter devotion to him and then lit up the sport, didn't they? And that made us more for Under So.
I imagine Under So is the sort of horse that may have sold tickets on his own to an event like Cheltenham, and that's going to be a huge, sad piece of breaking news today. Obviously, thankfully, the horse is okay and long term, all is well, but unfortunately, retirement beckons for the veteran. Right then, that is that taken care of. Time to look ahead to tomorrow. As always, we ask our pundit to have a look at a couple of races tomorrow. And we've got one at Doncaster and one at Southall. The rain is falling pretty hard. We are recording this in West Yorkshire. We're not a million miles away from Doncaster, and the rain is falling and falling really hard. So we really do hope that everything gets the go-ahead to tomorrow. Doncaster's been on today. What's the ground been like as the day goes on, in your view, on watching the
at 3:24, they changed it to soft good to soft in places. I would be thinking it was more soft heavy in places.
Okay.
They are getting through it. They're getting through it, and there's lying water on the track. They just don't want the sustained rainfall throughout, because then that then does turn it. And they've had to absorb horrific weather, so is countrywide, but as much as anything, Doncaster since before October, and how much rain can that race course take? It's not been given a let up, Doncaster.
Been relentless, hasn't it?
And what's not good for Doncaster this weekend is the fact that they had a meeting today and tomorrow. We'll see. Fingers tightly crossed, because it's a great meeting tomorrow.
It is a decent cup. We've actually got quite a lot of good racing tomorrow.
Yeah, we have.
Newbury, Lingfield, Kelso, Navan, Doncaster and Southall all on the agenda. James Millman is your presenter on William Hill Racing Radio on Saturday. Andy Holding joins him again once more. We'll try and get as many of those Navan races in on the radio as we can, see how the schedule lies with that. If you are tuning into William Hill's Betting TV, we will also be covering the Saudi Arabian Cup racing from Riyadh, completely free to air. So if you do want to keep an eye on a lot of English and British interest, Oisin Murphy's gone over. Hopefully they can all get through customs, what with the concerns about coronavirus and whatnot. A lot of interest for the British riders and raiders over at Riyadh. But William Hill's Betting TV is your place to keep abreast of all of that. Right, back to our previews tomorrow. We're going to talk, first of all, about the Grimthorpe Handicap Chase. Class 2, 3:35 at Doncaster, 3 miles and 2 furlongs, and all importantly, 1 extra yard, according to the Racing Post. At time of recording, There are 11 that go to post. The going is actually listed now on the Racing Post as heavy, which is interesting compared to what we've been hearing so far. Worthy Farm, 7-2, 5-1 for Boldmere. Yaltari, 6-1. Captain Chaos, 13-2. 15-2 for Chidswell, definitely red. 8, double figure prices for Fortified Bay, St. Xavier, Aaron Ladd, Caesar Aerosoli, and Ascot du Bruyere. Right, is there one, is there two, is there three or four? Who would you like to talk about in this race?
First of all, let's talk about the 2017 winner, Definitely Red.
Okay.
We suspect that this horse's first preference is not here. It's at Kelso.
Okay.
But should Kelso be beaten by the weather, Definitely Red did win this in 2017. And when he won this, he beat The Last Samurai, Wakanda and Yala Enki. That's the depth of Grimthorpe we're talking of.
That's a good Grimthorpe.
That's a good Grimthorpe. And Definitely Red will be wearing cheek pieces for the first time. I can't believe he's being given these cheek pieces because he's run brilliantly this season for me. He's considering the class he's been running against. He runs against the best. He was fourth to Ballyoptic in the Charlie Hall. He was fourth in the Beecher Chase to Walk the Mill.
Yep.
And second in that race was Kimberlite Candy, who we went on to see Kimberlite Candy go on to win at Warwick. And then last time out, he was second to Vintage Clouds in the Peter Marsh. They're all big top class chases.
They are.
And there's nothing to say that he wouldn't kind of defend his crown. Well, we would say, though, he's got a lot of weight and he might go to Kelso. I'd be minded, though, to sit up straight if he did stay here. There's a big warning to you, though, everyone. Only two favourites have won this in the last 10 years. And
we see
Paul Nicholls has got Worthy Farm here. And Worthy Farm's two wins have both come at Wincanton.
Okay, very much a Paul Nicholls stalwart venue.
Fine. And he's no doubt with those wins got this race earmarked.
Yeah.
Saying that, though, he's only won it once ever, and that was 20 years ago.
Right.
With Knight Templar. So he must be minded, I must try and win this again. Yeah, right.
There's been support for Worthy Farm. The earliest price I've got listed here is actually 6-1, so 6-1 to 7-2,
yeah,
even at the early prices, is good support.
There must be, in his mind, there must be room for manoeuvrability. That said, though, he's still carrying 11-2. His rating is 137. Is there that much more movement in his rating? That would concern me because there's others around him that are carrying either equal or a little bit more that have, for me, a bit more hardier, because this is going to be a race where you need to be battle-hardened. We've got last year's winner in the race, Chidswell, beat Dingo Dollar last year. Chidswell, he's back. It was a good prep, a second in a veterans chase at Kelso, and then third in the Skybet chase. And that's an exceptionally good run when you see he was against the stayer that is OK Corral, and they, no doubt, they brought over Derek O'Connor to ride OK Corral to have another go at the Cheltenham Festival. But what we do know from Chidswell, he can handle the surface, he can handle the configuration of the course, and he's battle hardened. I can see that you can see that he got beaten in the Scottish Nationals subsequently and got pulled up, but Nicky Richards has gently started his season up again to think that I'll have another go at the Grimthorpe. And horses run well again and again in the Grimthorpe.
Yeah.
We saw that Wayward Prince had run in a Grimthorpe way back before he came and won it, and then went on to win the Scottish National Wayward Prince. So it's a race where they come back and run really well. Worthy Farm, as we said, been well backed, been shortened up for Paul Nicholls. But I wonder if you change the trainers around for Worthy Farm and Boldmere, whether the pricing structure would be the same.
Okay, that's an interesting way of thinking.
It could have been a four-timer after the fall at Wetherby, because it was three lengths clear when fell in the Grade 2 Towton at Wetherby. Boldmere, for me, is flying up the weights, but the class he's running against is better than Worthy Farmers run against.
Okay.
So, and you can tell that by the weights. He's rated 147, but he is, yeah, that's right for him. 147 is a confirmation of his ability. Then you've got Venetia Williams, Yaltari. My worry about Venetia's, some are running really, really well and some aren't.
Okay. Hot and cold.
And hot and cold. And we've not seen this one since, been beaten a long way at Ascot. And we saw a couple of hers yesterday that needed their runs.
Okay.
And Yaltari, yes, has got a big chance in here, but I sense that Yaltari will not only have a big chance in here, but there'll be something and further, something and something further. But we always tick Venetia, don't we, when it's heavy ground. Now we get to the horse that I really like in the race. I really like Captain Chaos.
Okay.
People are going to groan. You're going to say, it's had lots and lots of runs. It's had 20 chases. Why hasn't Captain Chaos got more in the win column?
Okay.
Well, Captain Chaos, what he does, he's over-enthusiastic and throws himself into his races and attacks his fences too hard for me. Bridget Andrews is on him tomorrow. He was second in the rehearsal chase to take him risks, and then he kept on really well. I know he got beat 10 lengths in the classic chase, but in that Warwick classic chase, 10 lengths can be a comparison to saying this, getting beaten a length, because they seem to go round and round and there's lots of undulations that potentially you don't appreciate at Warwick, and it's a very, very hard course to jump, and that's what Captain Chaos does do. He does jump, and if he gets in his rhythm, which he will do here, he needs a fast pace, and sometimes he gets in races where there isn't a fast pace, he gets crowded behind and he sulks. Whereas Doncaster, even if it's heavy, they will go a pace that is a top-class pace.
Okay.
And he's only got 10-13, as I said before. Bridget Andrews is on board. She gets on well with him. She was on him when he was second in that rehearsal chase. And for me, he's value at his price. He's 1-3-4. He has been rated a lot, lot higher. He runs against some mighty horses. I can see at Cheltenham, you see he finished behind any second now. Well, that would be Ted's Grand National horse, and that won recently any second now over 2 miles,
which
is that's
Ted's
Grand National horse. That's just how good Captain Chaos is. He's got that Ballyoptic run, he's got a run behind the Scottish National winner, and that Kimberlite Candy, who's one of the main protagonists. If you take Tiger Roll out of the National, Kimberlite Candy and Walter Mill would probably be big liabilities for the betting industry.
More than likely.
And he's only finished 10 lengths behind Kimberlite Candy. So Captain Chaos for me in the Grimthorpe.
Captain Chaos come up against a lot of good opposition recently, and that might be the good form that leads to a Grimthorpe victory. Has also been supported, actually. Did touch 10-1, but at time of recording is 13-2, so support for the Dan Skelton runner as well. That was the Grimthorpe, the 3:35 at Doncaster. The second race that we are going to talk about is the 6:30 at Southall, the all-weather, so we've got a much better chance of this definitely going ahead. 1 mile, 6 furlongs, handicap class 4, 4-year-olds 0-80. We have 7 of them going to post here. Harbour Front at 13-8, 100-30. Sociologist Argus, 4-1. Charlie D, 9-2. The Resdev Way, 17-2. Al Curb, 22s, 33-1 outsider, Dawn Trooper. Where should we start here?
We'll start with the favourite, Harbour Front. It's only had 3 races.
Yes.
Won the last one. That was over a mile and a half, everyone, though. Beating horse called Straight Out of Compton. Now he's got an official rating of 73. And this is what everything's dependent on. Do you think he warrants a 73? Or should it be higher? Or should it be lower? If you think that the rating should be higher, then the 13-8 is enormous value. If you think he doesn't warrant the 73 just after those 3 runs, well, then we look elsewhere for value. And I'm more minded to look elsewhere for value on this occasion. I always try and find value. Sociologist has had 23 races, 16 on the all-weather. The last 2 in January and Feb, finished 2nd both times. Not a bad runs on both occasions. And you can see one's over a mile and a half and one's over the triple of the 1 mile, 6 furlong, which the Southall 6:30 is, and it isn't a bad effort. It's rated, it's gone up a couple of pounds, but this horse is either rated 59 or 60 and now finds itself on 62, and just a small movement then forces the horse's ability down, in my opinion. We then look at Argus. Now, he likes Southall. Now, you look at the form figures, and you wouldn't ordinarily be attracted to Argos because you can see an eighth and a sixth there, and it's you're thinking, ooh. I then picked out just its Southall form, and it reads 1-2-1-4.
That's decidedly better sample
than picking on the or weather form as a whole.
Yeah.
So you now know its rating is currently 73 from recently being 78. It's tumbled down the weights because it hasn't, I think he's only beaten two horses home in its last three runs. But then you take out its Southall runs.
Yeah.
And then you're talking about a different entity. He should probably be rated 70 or 69 on the all weather as a whole and 75 at Southall.
It makes perfect sense. I mean, back on the 27th of November, we actually had a Southall win. It was a course and distance victory.
Yeah.
So there's that homegrown form.
That's sometimes how you look at the races. And then that 75 win, how does that compare to Harbourfront, who's now rated 73, only off three races, the last time it won? The horse, though, that I'm going to pick, I'm going to stay safe, and I'm going to go with Charlie D. Charlie D is very versatile in the fact that he races up to 2 miles half a furlong. But for me, rather than stretch his stamina out to 2 miles, I like him when he's dropped back down to 1.6 miles, and his rating is much stronger. Now, I think he needed the 10th of February run because that was 115 days off. He ran at Wolverhampton, and where he ran there, he tried to make all... And that's understandable because I wanted probably just to see where they stood at that point on ratings-wise and form-wise. And this is a solid 80 or so horses, rated 82 coming into this. He's better over 1 mile, 6 furlongs. And that's why I'm going to take him today. He's definitely, for me, at worst an 80 horse, which means that Harbourfront on 73 possibly wouldn't be good enough unless he's going to improve 7.
Yeah.
Sociologist is kind of nowhere near him. And my danger would be the home horse Argus. So I'm going to stick with Charlie D in this race.
Charlie D, currently in the betting, is 4th favourite, essentially, at 9-2 with Argus, the other horse to get a bit of a nod of approval here at 4-1. Harbourfront 13-8, warm enough as the favourite. There are certainly question marks, as we've mentioned. Well, that brings us to the end of today's Daily Racing Podcast. Thank you ever so much for joining us. I feel like I've learnt today. It's been brilliant.
No, brilliant. I've enjoyed it as well. It's great talking about a different role, because I perfectly understand everyone at home. You're all seeking the Cheltenham kind of golden ticket, the Cheltenham winner.
You are,
but
yes,
there are other people out there that are trying to find the story. We're all going to enjoy Cheltenham in our own little way.
Yes, we are. You're absolutely right. And I really hope you enjoy Gold Cup Day,
yes,
which is your chance to really enjoy it.
Yes.
If there is listeners out there thinking, well, hang on a minute, I didn't get a selection, don't worry. If you go to the William Hill YouTube channel or the Twitter page at Will Hill Racing, the entire Cheltenham preview show that we recorded last Tuesday night is available to watch now. That's Dave Kellner, Mark Walton of William Hill, alongside Leona Mayer, Andrew Thornton, both Tristan Davies's, Sam and his old man. Rebecca Curtis was there as well, as was Knight of the Realm Sir Anthony McCoy, talking you through all the big races at Cheltenham. That is available right now via all of William Hill's social media channels. Join us tomorrow on Saturday for another edition of the William Hill Daily Racing Podcast, and of course join us on William Hill Racing Radio as well. Once again, thank you so much.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Racing Radio is available on Alexa smart speakers. Just enable the William Hill Racing Radio skill or say, open William Hill Racing Radio, and leave the rest to us.
A huge thank you to Tanya Stevenson today for joining us on the Daily Racing Podcast. I hope you enjoyed that look behind the scenes at how a professional tackles something as big as the Cheltenham Festival. Now, as we try to do on a Friday's podcast, I'm able to bring you a couple of previews that some of our retail team have recorded ahead of another big day of racing. Firstly, Luke Elder is going to preview the 3:15 at Newbury tomorrow before we get Stephen Powell to have a look at a couple of the big races
races at Doncaster.
The 315 at Newbury is always a very competitive contest. I do think Benny's King could go quite close in it this year. Obviously, extra places on offer here at William Hill make Benny's King more an each-way bet, but I do think Benny's King will take plenty of beating as well. Last time around at Ascot, just got chinned on the line by Domaine de Lille, a horse who was in very good form and does re-oppose here. But with extra places on offer here at William Hill, the 315 at Newbury looks a cracker.
We've got a nice field of mares lining up for this listed race over 3 miles, and I think this staying trip will really suit Kill Anna, who's stepping up from 2 miles, 5.5 furlongs, where she's won her last two races very impressively, and I can envisage, with the emphasis on stamina, her drawing clear for an impressive victory for the Paul Nicholls team. Well, Boldmere has improved with every start over fences this season for Caroline Bailey and would have gone close to winning a Grade 2 at Wetherby last time if not for falling at the final fence. But stamina really is his forte. The extra quarter mile should be right up his street as well. And he's won here at Doncaster before. So Boldmere all the way for me in the Gripsall.
You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.